All right. Hello, everyone, and I want to welcome you back to another edition of your Adrenal Fix teleseminar series. My name is Dr. Joel Rosen. I am the Adrenal Fatigue Recovery Ninja, as I like to call myself, and I want to thank you for joining in tonight and taking part of our webinar teleseminar series. I have a couple of housekeeping things that I need to take care of initially just to get out of the way. That's this legal disclaimer: the information including but not limited to text, graphics, images, and other materials contained in this presentation is for informational purposes only. The purpose of this conference is to provide an understanding and knowledge of various health topics. It's not intended to be a substitute for any professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of a physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have encountered in this presentation. All right, so what are we going to be talking about tonight? We're going to be talking about how to treat adrenal fatigue by using dietary ketosis. And this is part two because I have already done part one about a month ago. And if you want to hear that replay, it's available on my blog at adrenalfatiguesociety.com. Just look under the past podcasts, and I have recorded that for you. But the reason I wanted to do a part two, I could probably do a part five on this, is because there's just so much intricate details in how to become ketogenic. What is it? What is it not? Who's it good for? Who's it not good for? I've tried it and it hasn't worked. Is it good for adrenal fatigue sufferers? What kind of foods do you have to eat? How do I do it? What should I be feeling? These are some of the questions that just can't be handled in one seminar series. So I figured I'd do a couple of these until you guys finally get it and try it out. Because the worst thing that I find is people who have tried it and say that it doesn't work for them. And I will be the first to tell you that absolutely this is not for everybody, especially those that are dealing with adrenal fatigue, people that are stressed out, they have very little energy, they can't focus, they have brain fog, anxiety, they wake up with very little energy, or they crash in the middle of the day, they get shaky, lightheaded, and jittery if they don't eat a meal, they may crash after a meal, their internal time clock is off, so they have no energy in the morning, and then they have energy at night. They get heart palpitations or waves of inner trembling, and they're just not bouncing back the way that they used to. And I find more often than not with this particular type of demographic that trying to get them to eat a ketogenic type of diet is going to be very, very challenging at first. So it wouldn't be like we may wave a magic wand and say, okay, you've got to start getting into a ketogenic state today. It takes a lot of effort and preparation to get into that state because you got to figure the whole definition of someone that's dealing with an adrenal fatigue problem is that you're not balancing your blood sugar very well. And that means you may have crashes in the middle of the day or you get shaky and lightheaded if you haven't eaten. And so here we are trying to ask you to restrict your carbs, which I know a lot of people feel if they don't have their carbs, they just get no energy whatsoever. And we're going to tie that in a little bit. But also, you find that if you're trying to rely on fuel less frequently, where you've been told in the past, and I'm guilty of this as a patient, and I'm guilty of this as a practitioner, where I've been told to eat several meals frequently throughout the day, or I've told my patients to eat a balanced meal of a protein, carb, and fat, you know, at breakfast, snack, dinner, snack, and then snack whenever you feel you're crashy. And I think there's a valid reason to do that, but I think ultimately that's a patch. And until you address the underlying stressors like your job or being in front of the computer all the time or finances or marriages or chemical exposures or electrical pollutants or viruses or parasites or bacteria or all of the above, these are the main drainers of the adrenal gland that need to be addressed. And eating several times throughout the day is a help, but it's not ultimately addressing the problem. And ultimately, you'll find if you just Google ketogenic diets and cancer or ketogenic diet and chronic conditions, there's so much research that's coming out of this nowadays that is very favorable for trying to become a fat burner. And I think that there's a lot of political involvement in terms of the American Heart Association. If you go back and you read some of the books on, I think the book was called The Big Fat Lie, I think that's something like that, and it talks about how the establishment really tried to fight to put down or not reveal the information about how effective or how helpful saturated fats are in a diet, and not to mention how we went in a tangent and we started eating low fat, high carbs foods, and now getting everyone on cholesterol lowering medications, and now, you know, 25 years later, you have patients or people that have more cardiovascular diseases than ever. And so if it was all about low fat, high carbs and not causing any cardiovascular problems, then we would have solved this problem a long time ago. So the title of this presentation is How to Treat Adrenal Fatigue by Using Dietary Ketosis, Part 2. And I want you guys to stay all the way to the end because I got a lot of information to give you. I'm going to give you a free gift at the end for being on the line. I know you're taking time out of your busy schedule to get some information from me, and I'm aware of that, and I'm grateful for that. And really, that's my job, and that's my mission, is aside from being a great father to my twins who are at camp right now, and mommy and daddy are all by ourselves, and being a great husband, my goal is to help patients that have been suffering like I had been suffering with adrenal fatigue, chronic fatigue, and brain fog, and just being stressed out and driven through the walls with anxiety and just not functioning the way you should. So that's my goal. So I want to give you guys a free gift at the end, and perhaps we can work one-on-one in terms of having a different look at your health and a different opinion, or work with someone who does a whole bunch of different tests that you're not used to. So what are we going to cover? We're going to cover exactly what is a ketogenic diet, what it means to be keto adaptive, and what it doesn't mean. Most doctors get this wrong, and when they get this wrong, it can impact your ability to recover from your adrenal fatigue, because I think it's a viable dietary option for those that are suffering with chronic conditions to become keto adaptive, and we're going to discuss how and why. We're also going to cover why unstable mitochondrial dysfunction and blood sugar is often the root cause behind food sensitivities, autoimmunities, and ultimately adrenal fatigue. I will do a presentation in the upcoming weeks on mitochondrial dysfunction and inflammation and oxidative stress and the burning through of the amino acids that help you produce neurotransmitters and how that relates to your 23andMe genetic testing. But suffice to say, if you didn't get anything else besides this next sentence out of this presentation, then you'd be light years ahead of a lot of people who aren't listening, and that is you have mitochondrial dysfunction. At the end of the day, your mitochondria is where the energy of the cell takes place. It's where oxidative stress and free radical damage impact the ability to produce energy. And if you are dealing with a lot of stressors, because at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's stressors from finances. It's stressors from exercising too much. It's stressors from exposures to toxins in the environment that's more toxic than it's ever been in terms of chemicals and pesticides and pollutants and antibiotic residues and arsenic and just so much chemicals in the environment these days that our mitochondria is not designed by the makers above, didn't have it in their foresight to know that we were going to be succumbing or influenced by over 80,000 chemicals in our environment. And so the mitochondria is unable to produce energy at a rate faster than it is to put out fires, then ultimately mitochondrial dysfunction develops, and then you develop adrenal fatigue. So this ketogenic diet is really dedicated towards those that have mitochondrial dysfunction and are looking to burn the preferred fuel, which is the ketones, versus the glucose. So I've got a lot of resources for you, too, so I want you to put your pen and paper together. And the first resource I'm going to tell you is the Keto Clarity Diet. Keto Clarity, they have it on audiobooks, and I've listened to it now two times. Jimmy I forget what his last name is, but he was a 400-pound individual who's now been keto adaptive for 10 years, and he interviews a lot of different doctors and the myths that are involved with becoming ketogenic and burning fat, and I think you get a lot of insight on that, because every day that I work with my patients, I try to convince them on the benefits of becoming keto adaptive, or in the very least, not necessarily keto adaptive, but restrictive in their carbs. I was working with a very healthy eating patient, and she's eating 160 grams of carbs a day, which she didn't realize based on the little foods that add up, the apples and the quinoa and the banana and the fruit. And not to say that you can't have fruits, because it's very healthy to have the phytonutrients and the vitamins and minerals that you get in them, but ultimately, if you have mitochondrial dysfunction and you have oxidative stress and inflammation, when you fuel your cells through glucose metabolism, a lot of things break down, and we become insulin resistant, and we become adrenal fatigued, and at the end of the day, you are exceeding your carb tolerance without even realizing it. I had a video the other day of a gentleman that I'm working with, and he has a progressive neurological disorder, autoimmunity, and we weren't even past 9 o'clock in the morning, and he was already at 80 grams of carbs per day. So in the very least, if you don't become keto adaptive, at least become glucose sensitive, or at least become glucose aware or knowledgeable of how much carbs you're eating in a given day, and perhaps limit them. And so if you're eating 160 grams of carbs per day, try to go down to 120, or try to go down to 100, and make up for it in healthy fats. So we can go over that as well, but I think that this is a really good option for people that are suffering with adrenal fatigue. Also, the common dietary pitfalls and roadblocks that you must identify in your attempt to become keto adaptive in order to help solve your adrenal fatigue problem. I had I don't know if he's on the line today, but a gentleman who said that this didn't work for him, and perhaps it didn't. You know, it doesn't work for everyone. There's going to be some contraindications that I'm going to talk about at the end of this workshop, and that's why it's really important to get an assessment done with your functional medical doctor to look at your blood work to make sure that you're able to begin a ketogenic diet before you even plant the seed, because if there's liver issues or there's cholesterol issues or you have some important SNPs or mutations that don't allow you to break down fatty acids effectively, or there's other variable factors that won't allow you to do this, then that's a legitimate reason. But I really had the sense that this wasn't a legitimate reason, and that is because of just lack of knowledge. Exceeding your protein intake, because on a paleo diet, we keep our carbs low and we keep our protein high. And when you keep your protein levels high, you're more susceptible to exceeding your protein threshold. And then something called gluconeogenesis will cause your glucose to be produced out of the excess protein that you're taking. So now you become a glucose burner. And I talked about that last time. But really, at the end of the day, what I'm trying to get at is you need to test. You can do the ketone strips. They're really inexpensive for the first 2 weeks. And in those 2 weeks, I try to tell my patients, get a baseline on how much carbs you're taking in a given day for the first 3 days, or even do that before you start. So for the first 3 days, just don't even change anything. Just get an idea on how much carbs you're eating in a given day. And it's not hard. If you have an iPhone or you have an access to these computers, then you can just search in the Google search engines how many grams of carbs in a banana. And you can either speak that to Siri or you can put that in the Google search term and it will pop up 27 grams. How many grams of carbs in a cup of rice? It will pop up, say, 120 grams. And you'll be surprised by the end of the 3 days when you get your average amount of carbs that you're taking that it exceeds maybe 200 or even in some cases 2,000. So that's on the rare case, but there's a lot of people that are way above 500, and just cutting that in half would be very helpful for them, whether or not they become keto adaptive or not. At the end of the day, you need to test. So if you're not testing and you say that this diet didn't work for you, then I'm going to be the the tough but loving friend, and just be the naysayer and say, you know what, it didn't work for you because you didn't test it, and you have blinders on, and you don't see the entire picture because you're not testing and you're not changing protocols. And that's what I really encourage you guys to do, is use yourself as a study of one, where you're testing your ketones with the urinary test strips. You have a certain amount of food that day, and you see what the result was. You test it in the morning before you eat anything. You test it at the end of the day, 3 to 4 hours after you have your last meal. And then you get an idea on where you are. If you're at a certain value and the next day you change the carb intake by 20 and you go up, then obviously you became more keto burner. Or if you ate a little more carbs and it went down and you're not burning as much ketones that day, then obviously there's a cause and effect. And that's what I really urge you to do. And then once you start to learn your threshold, then you don't exceed it. And as you become more keto adaptive, the great thing is that now you can eat a little more carbs. Some people that have really bad blood sugar handling ability and they're type 2 diabetics, they're not going to be able to eat more than 20 grams of carbs per day. And they may not be able to eat more than 100 grams of protein per day. But as they get to become more keto adaptive and their mitochondria health is working better, they're less inflamed, their glucose is working better, they have more mental clarity, they're just generating energy better, then they can start to increase their threshold of total carbs per day or total proteins per day. And the only way you're going to know that is by measuring. So we'll talk about that as well. 6 ketogenic supplements. I talked about this last time, but for those that are on the line for the first time, I'm going to give you a couple of great supplements that would be really helpful to try to help boost you into a ketogenic state. It's not a substitute for eating low-carb, high-fat diets, but it's certainly going to help you get to that point. I had to actually help a patient with one of the supplements because she didn't have a gallbladder and she's having a tough time emulsifying her fats, so we suggested some ox bile or some bile salts. And that's one of the things that just drives me crazy, is you get patients that have their gallbladder removed and they have never been told by the surgeon or their primary care doctor that they should be on bile salts for the rest of their life. I bet you if you just did a poll and you just went to someone who didn't have a gallbladder and you asked them, I'd be guessing more than 75% of them have not been told that, which I think is a shame as well. And then we're going to talk about 5 steps to ensure ketogenic adaptation, and that's part of the new part for this presentation. So I want to have a lot of fun. I want you to overcome your adrenal fatigue issues. I want you to be less stressed out. I really want you to get back out of pain, not rely on prednisone all the time. And I see a lot of patients that have to rely on that, and they can't get off of that. I don't want you to crash in the middle of the day. Being wired and tired is terrible. You can't fall asleep, yet you're just exhausted. Going to your doctor and not being told that there is such a thing as adrenal fatigue, nothing more frustrating than that. It is a real problem. It may not necessarily be a very commonly found primary adrenal fatigue where they do an ACTH test and your adrenals don't mount any cortisol response, but that's what doctors rest their hats on. That's what they say. There's no such thing as an adrenal fatigue problem because you passed an ACTH stimulation test. And there's so many breakdowns that can occur, I've talked about before, where your HPA axis gets dysregulated, which means the thermostat, if you will, doesn't kick in when the temperature changes for hot or for cold. That's the analogy I use. Your cortisol levels become too high, and then we have desensitized receptor sites, hypothalamus breakdown, you have hippocampus breakdown, and you just have a lot of problems that aren't identified by traditional medicine. So let's get into this. A little bit about myself for those that don't know me. My name's Dr. Joel Rosen. I'm originally from Toronto, Canada, and I went to school in California, and now I live in Florida, and I guarantee you may have seen me on that show called America's Most Wanted, going from town to town. Actually, I'm not on that. And I am trained as a chiropractor, actually. I'm from a traditional medical family, and I injured my back, and I wanted to avoid surgery, so I ended up going to the chiropractic college in Toronto, and that was the epiphany for me to know what I wanted to do. And after that, I graduated with over $150,000 worth of student loans in California, and my wife was I think she was about 2 months pregnant, and we were moving to a whole new state, to Florida, and I didn't know anyone. And so that's when my adrenals crashed, and I have 3 mouths to feed. I injured my back again. I had a lot of student debt. I opened my own practice, and I was thinking, how on earth am I gonna make a living? How am I gonna get out of bed? How am I gonna find my car keys? I'm just exhausted. I'm shaky. I'm lightheaded. I'm brain foggy. And I'm stressed out. I have anxiety, and I really was in the bottom of the barrel. And I think that's something that helps me to identify with a lot of my patients is, I understand what you've gone through. I've gone through it, and I still wanted to exercise a lot. It's a big part of my life. It's a big part of the reason why I burnt out my adrenal glands, because of the oxidative stress that built up from exercising excessively. But ultimately, I had a acupuncturist patient come into my office, and he brought in the Dr. Karazian's book, Why Do I Still Have Thyroid Symptoms Even Though My Blood Tests Are Normal? And I read that book. It took me a little bit of time to get to it, but I read it, and it was like another epiphany. I realized this is what I got to do. I had never even heard of adrenal fatigue. It talked about adrenal fatigue in there. It talked about gut inflammation. It talked about immune breakdown. It talked about gluten sensitivity, and it just made me realize that I don't know enough as much as I need to know. So I went back to Integrative Medicine College, Functional Medicine University. I'm now enrolled in the College of Integrative Medicine, and I spend a lot of hours a day studying this stuff so I can help you guys. And that's my story. So, but I did definitely suffer with adrenal problems. I suffered with waiting too long between meals and then trying to eat frequent meals. And ever since I've become keto adaptive for the last year, I can tell you my energy levels are sky high. And it's really been a blessing for me, and I think it will be a blessing for you too. So let's talk about what we're going to talk about tonight. What exactly is a ketogenic diet? And what does it mean to be keto adaptive, and what it doesn't mean? And most importantly, I want to talk about what doctors think it means, because if you go to a doctor and they tell you that ketogenic diets are the worst thing ever for you, or they can give you a stroke, or you can go into a coma, or you can get kidney damage, then realize that that doctor still listens to 8-track tapes. And they haven't heard of the thing called the internet, or they haven't heard of satellites that make music come out of the sky, because that's really backward thinking. That's someone that doesn't know their nutrition, they don't know their biochemistry, and they're confusing ketoacidosis to dietary ketosis. Sounds familiar, but they're two very different things. And I'm not offended, or I'm not afraid to speak up against doctors that don't know their research or don't know their material, because I think they're practicing malpractice. If they are withholding information from you or giving you the wrong information and passing judgment, then they are at fault, and I believe that they are practicing malpractice. And so, you know, there's a couple of things that I've worked with patients in the past where I got their vitamin D levels, and they were at 18, and we got them up to 60, and they come back to me, and they said, you know, I'm really mad. I can't believe that my vitamin D levels are so high. And I said, well, actually, the research shows now it should be between 80 to 100. And I said, where did you get the information that it was so high? And she said, well, my doctor told me that it was too high. And I said, I sold her again. I told her that her doctor still listens to 8-track tapes too. If a lot of people don't even know what those are, which tells me my age, but those were around before cassette tapes. And they were around even, I think, before the record players. And so that means that your doctor is not up with the research. And the average doctor from the research is behind the research 19 years. And because by the time something comes to the mainstream medicine, it's already been published 6, 7, 8 years ago, which took a while to publish in the first place. So It's unfortunate, but most doctors don't know about what dietary ketosis is. And if you have an open-minded doctor and is willing to learn and willing to help and willing to be receptive to it, then you found a good doctor. If you have someone that just puts it down from the beginning and tells you that it's dangerous and it's not going to work for you, then I would tell you that perhaps you need to find a new doctor. That's a good litmus test to do. As far as food proportions go, the typical proportions for the Western diet is 50% carbs, 30% fats, 20% proteins. And I would even say it's more like 50% carbs, 40% protein, 10% fats. And that's the typical food diet that you'll see in the Western diet. But when you get into a keto adaptive diet, you're talking about as low as 5% carbs, 5 to 10% carbs, 75 to 80% fats. And when we talk about fats, we're not talking about deep fried foods. We're talking about seeds and nuts and broth and avocados and coconuts and just a lot of healthy fats, not unhealthy fats. And then proteins somewhere in the 15%. But it's individualized. No two people are the same thing. So what you may require to get into ketogenic states, I may require a little less, a little different. So that's where the testing takes place with the ketone strips and the blood glucometer, which is also if you go to Amazon or eBay, they have the Precision Extra is what it's called, and it's by Abbott Labs, and they will do dual function where you can buy the ketone strips and then you can buy the glucose strips. And that's what I recommend you do, is buy the ketone strips and the glucose strips and measure your blood sugar first thing in the morning and measure your ketones first thing in the morning. So you're going to have to prick your finger twice, and then 4 hours after you eat your last meal, do it again. And we'll talk about what ranges you should be looking at. And over the course of you changing your composition of protein, fats, and carbs, you'll see your glucose go down and you'll see your ketones go up. And that's a great thing. That means that you're becoming keto adaptive, you're getting less inflammation, you're getting more mental clarity, you're helping your mitochondria function better, and you're on your way to healing. What most doctors get this wrong, they think of dietary ketosis as metabolic acidosis, which are two different things. And yes, ketoacidosis or metabolic acidosis is very, very dangerous. But those are for those that have very high blood sugar, not very low blood sugar, and that's the key difference. Dietary ketosis starts somewhere from 0.45 millimoles if you're measuring your blood ketone levels, and could go somewhere as high as 5 to 6 millimoles, whereas ketoacidosis is somewhere in the 16 to 20 millimoles or above. So it's at least six times higher when you're in when you're in metabolic acidosis. Dietary ketosis, also, your glucose levels are low, whereas in metabolic acidosis, your glucose levels are high. So that's what's very dangerous about this diet is a lot of people will say it didn't work when they were eating a lot of dietary fat, because they were also eating a lot of dietary carbohydrates as well. And that's more dangerous, because now you're going to have really high blood sugar and really high ketones, and that's when you can start to get into to trouble. Dietary ketosis, also your insulin levels are very low, whereas in ketoacidosis, your insulin levels are very high. So there's a huge difference. When you become keto-adaptive and you're measuring your blood glucose and your blood ketones, you're going to find that your blood glucose can be somewhere in the 60 to 70 range, and that's going to be very healthy. And your ketones will be somewhere in the 0.8 to 5.0. And that's when you know you're in the zone, so to speak. All right, so let's talk about ketones and energy systems. Physiology 101, I just wanted to get a little bit technical with you guys, is that energy system is simply not a formula of food in equals food out. That's old-time thinking. So when we used to go on diets, we used to say, okay, if my metabolic rate is 2,000 and I eat 2,000 calories, I'll maintain my weight. or if my metabolic rate is 2,000 and I eat only 1,500 calories, then I'll have a negative deficit of 500. And every time that 500 adds up to 3,500, that's 1 pound. And it would be nice if it was formulaic like that and it was just black and white, but we have living cells, we have inflammation, we have mitochondrial dysfunction, we have an adaptive system, and our body doesn't work like that. So no matter how much food or calories we take in one day on a day-to-day basis, we're going to have fluctuations on what our cells do for their energy production. It's a little bit complicated, but basically what it means is you can have a day where you fast and you can have a day where you gorge, and your cells know what to do with those fuel sources. They know how to store some of those for excess times when you don't have the calories, and they know how to disperse them when you have excess calories. So each cell is able to adapt to the internal metabolic demands that are placed on it, and that's really how, as cavemen, insulin started to help us store more of our fat. And that's what insulin does. It's a storer, and we store it around our midsection and the love handles. So when we have excess calories, which we do in our society, we have excess carbs, our insulin levels go high, and we say, hey, we're engineered to store this for times of famine, so let's hold it on to this, and let's close the valve for burning fat, because we don't need that fat. We need to use that fat for a day when we don't have any calories whatsoever, or a long-term famine or a long-term calorie restriction. We need to be able to utilize that when necessary, and that's when we run into trouble. Energy is tightly regulated, so the demand of the cells cannot be met simultaneously. So basically what the point of this is that our cells know what to do with the fuel sources that we get. And if you change up the intake of your fuel sources, if you go from different percentages of fuel sources or different times of the day that you eat your fuel sources, they know what to do with it effectively. And if you're overeating, then it's going to hold on to those too much. And it will shut down the fat burning mechanisms, and you'll only become a glucose burner. And then you'll have mitochondrial dysfunction, you'll have insulin resistance, you'll have oxidative stress, you'll have immune breakdown, you'll have autoimmunities, and you'll have adrenal fatigue. So measuring your ketones. Ketones are water-soluble molecules from fatty acid oxidation. So burning up fat, we'd be developing ketones. And fats are broken down into three main ketones. Thus, we have three methods which we can measure our ketones. We have the beta-hydroxybutyrate, which is measured in the blood, and that's going to be the most accurate. It's going to be probably the most expensive. Those ketone strips are about $3 a strip, so they're not cheap. If you do a study of a month and you're doing one in the morning, one in the day, that's 60 strips. 60 times 3 is 180. So you're looking at about $180 to try to get into ketosis, and I think that's a small investment. The acetoacetate is measured in the urine. That's usually good for the first 2 weeks. It's the spillage of the ketones when you start to becoming keto adaptive, and they're really inexpensive. And so you can use those, but realize after 2 weeks, you're no longer spilling over the acetoacetate into the urine, and you're now producing beta-hydroxybutyrate in the blood, and you're going to think, oh, I can't believe this. I'm not eating very much carbs. I'm actually not eating that much protein. I'm eating a lot of dietary fat, and when I do a ketone strip, it's not showing that I'm keto-adaptive. You probably are keto-adaptive. It's just not spilling out into the urine anymore. And I see a lot of people make that mistake. And then the last one is the acetone, and that's measured in the breath. And the overall level reflects the metabolic uses of ketones. So basically what that means is if you want to get really sophisticated and talk about exercise, when you do a beta-hydroxybutyrate test, that's measuring your total amount of storage of beta, or how much you've produced over the long term. So it's your storage amount. When you measure your acetone, you are measuring your usage. And so if you start to reflect on the ratios of the beta-hydroxybutyrate to the acetone, you can start to make some intelligent decisions about how much you're storing, how much you're burning. Is the ratio even? Are you storing less than you're burning? Are you burning more than you're storing? And then that's when you can become more specific. And that's what I do with my patients. That's what I do when I'm working with them. It's a little bit beyond this teleseminar tonight. Maybe we'll do that in part three. But suffice to say, when you're measuring your ketones with blood, it's how much you're producing. And when you're measuring your ketones in your breath, it's how much you're burning and how much you're consuming. But they're all three effective ways for you to be able to measure your ketones, with realizing that there's some shortcomings with the urine and probably some expensive inconvenient pricking of the blood with the blood measurer. And then the breath test, it's $175. You go to Ketonix, which is K-E-T-O-N-I-X, ketonix.com, and that will cost about $175, and you can use that for the rest of your life. But you'll know when you're in ketosis as you get there. Ketones for fuel, basically the fuel goes into the Krebs cycle, whether it's from glucose or ketones, and it's converted into acetyl-CoA, which goes into the citric acid cycle, comes out the electron transport chain, and then you generate ATP. And the ketones are much more effective at doing that. It takes 3 steps versus 11 steps for glucose. And that's why that particular slide right there, you can actually burn fat with eating fat, because it takes less steps to get into being consumed and used up. And you get more energy for every pound for pound. You're going to have more energy produced for ketones through utilizing fatty acid versus glucose and burning up your sugars. And actually, you'll see even nowadays where it's being adapted for exercise. So you're getting long-distance runners where they used to do the carb fueling before a marathon or carb loading. When they become keto-adaptive, they have a lot more fuel supply for those long-distance exercises, which is really, really cool. I'd like to do a seminar on that one day. So anyways, the benefits of becoming keto-adaptive, I've mentioned them before, but here's them a little more. It improves your glucose metabolism. It also helps increase insulin sensitivity, so it means that you're going to have more energy. Also means that you're not going to have as much cravings. It also means that you're going to have a more stabilized blood sugar throughout the day. It's also helpful for those that suffer with type 2 diabetes, and it's very effective in reducing central adipose tissue around the sides, so getting rid of those love handles. As you become keto-adaptive and you're not hungry and you don't feel like you need to have that square meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because we've been conditioned for that, haven't we? You think about it. We think, okay, you know, you go to a resort or you go on vacation and you have an all-inclusive and it's breakfast, lunch, dinner, breakfast, lunch, dinner, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and you really feel like you go on a cruise, you really feel like you're eating so much more than you really need to. You're not hungry at those times, but you're just doing it most of the time to feel like you need to get your money's worth. Like you go to a buffet and you say, okay, I spent $18 for this buffet. I gotta eat my money's worth, and you're eating your money's worth, but you're not eating your cell's worth. You're over consuming, and so when you become keto adaptive, you actually learn to eat when hungry. And when you eat when hungry, you may not be hungry every time it comes around for the breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What in effect is happening is you're burning the fuel source that you have in your body, and that's the fat tissue around your midsection. So if you've ever had a tough time losing that midsection and losing the love handles, and I'll admit that's been a tough problem for me for a long, long time, and I didn't get it. I'm having small, frequent meals throughout the day. I'm eating protein, carbs, and fats, and I'm eating every 3 hours, and I'm not crashing any longer, even though I was still crashing, and I'm not losing the love handles. And so it wasn't until I become keto-adaptive where, oh my goodness, I haven't eaten since breakfast, and it's like 7 o'clock at night, and I feel like I still have a lot of energy, and I measure my ketones, and they're high, and I measure my glucose, and it's low, and I can actually push through to the next day, and I've consumed a lot of the excess storage of fat around my midsection. So for that reason, that could be really effective for you as well. Other benefits is it reduces inflammation. It also improves your mitochondrial efficiency. It helps with you producing better energy, so it's cleaner energy. It also helps with mitochondrial concentration. Mitochondria are more efficient and more effective, and also you can become, when you're doing the intermittent fasting, you're actually helping burn off or cull off the unhealthy mitochondria. So you're just making the population of your mitochondria that much more healthy. Improve cardiovascular function, improve energy. It helps with your epigenetic control. So it means that you're not going to have a lot of your genetic weak links being able to be turned on because of the inflammation in your body. And it helps with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. It helps reduce bowel pains and spasms and can actually reduce IBS symptoms as well. So who's it for? It's for people that have elevated inflammatory responses, so people that are suffering with chronic inflammation, mostly everyone on the phone tonight, people that have higher circulating glucose levels, specific diseases like degenerative disc disease, degeneration, inflammation, type 2 diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular diseases, although I'll put an asterisk beside that because when I talk about who's it not for, we'll talk about some people that have cardiovascular diseases. Even some cancers, you're seeing more and more patients that are going ketogenic with cancers. There's a lot of good research for that, and neurodegenerative diseases. Also people that aren't able to optimize their energy levels, which are adrenal fatigue people, people whose mental focus is being delayed, adrenal fatigue people, and people that have genetic predispositions for diseases. So people that have weak links in their gene cards, people that have had 23andMe tests and they have homozygous MTHFR, or they have homozygous COMT, or they have heterozygous MTR. If you haven't had a 23andMe test done yet, that will be one of my next topics of conversation. You need to do that because that's impacting your ability to make energy as well. Also, people that have gut disease. It's also for adrenal fatigue sufferers. So those that are on the line, it's worth a shot to get into a state of dietary ketosis to see if this can help put you over the edge. Because I know a lot of you guys have tried a lot of things. I've seen you. I've talked to you. And you've seen a lot of doctors. You guys are really educated. And you have a stack of paperwork. You have so much supplements that you're on. And then at the end of the day, you're just so close yet so far for solving the riddle. This could be one of those things. And the majority of patients that I talk to that have had ketogenic or have had adrenal fatigue issues, they haven't even heard of ketosis, or they may have tried it a long time ago and it didn't work, or they didn't realize how many carbs they're eating on a given day. And so it's another X factor for me. It's an X factor for my patients that once they get there, they find that it's the little tweak that they weren't doing that put them over the edge. So that's why we're talking about this another time. Who's it not for? Clients that can't commit. You know, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some tinkering. It's going to take some taking the leap of faith and understanding how it works and why it works, and that you may not be in the right zone. You may be at 70% fat for the day, and you need to be at 75, and you were 5% off. And you stopped because you were 5% off. Or you may have been eating 100 grams of protein per day and you needed to be at 90 grams of protein per day. Or you may have been at 35 grams of carbs and you needed to be at 30. It could be that minute in terms of the specific details that you needed to change. And how are you going to know if you're there or not? And that comes down to testing. And so I'm a bit of a skeptic when I talk to someone and they say, I've tried it and it hasn't worked. The first thing I'll say is, well, let me see the data on your glucose meters, on your ketone meters, on your urine strips. Let me see like your log on what you did with your percentages of protein and how you changed that. And most of you guys don't even tell me how much carbs you had in a day. So when I hear that, it's hard for me to believe that it didn't work for you. It's not for pregnant women, cancer patients who are at risk at developing cachexia and liver cancer, Clients with usually high blood lipid profiles or with a reasonably healthy diet, there's probably some SNPs going on there, which I'll talk about in a little bit. When I say SNPs, what I'm saying are mutations or altered genes that don't work as effective at breaking down fatty acids. People that have a chronically high life load and or are exhausted, so HPA axis. So how can that be? I said on one hand that this was for people that had adrenal fatigue, but on the other hand, I'm saying it's not for people that have adrenal fatigue. So which way do I mean? What I'm trying to say is in this particular slide is when you have the adrenal fatigue population that I deal with that are exhausted and they do cortisol tests through saliva or through blood or through urine and they're flatlining, this is not a great place to start, because what's happening is you are so unable to regulate your blood sugar that your cortisol levels are causing your blood sugar levels to fluctuate. So what I would tell you is there's a time and a place to be able to begin this. And for those patients, we tend to try to fix their neuroendocrine response first. So what the heck does that mean? That means we try to get you to breathe. We try to get you to remove yourself from the computer at certain times of the day so that you don't have any outside stressors. We try to get you to meditate. We try to get you to get out and walk. We try to just reduce your overall stress. Try to get you off any stimulants, coffee, caffeine. By the way, it's day 7 for me for no caffeine, and I'm doing fantastic. trying to go on maybe ashwagandha, which is a nice, healthy adaptogen that's not going to give you stimulants. A lot of you that I'm consulting with, when I look at the different nutrients and supplements that you're taking so many adrenal stuff, it's unbelievable. I talked to a guy the other day who was taking pregnenolone for 7 years. I mean, it's too much. Or people that have been on cortisol or hydrocortisone for so long. Or for people that have been on DHEA and hormone replacements for so long. Or people that, you know, are taking Cortef, or people that are taking Adrenastim, or taking some type of adrenal tonic, and then another adrenal tonic, and then another adaptogen. Sometimes you're taking too much stuff, and you just need to rev down the engines. And there's a thing called cell danger response. If any of you listen to Dr. Ben Lynch, he talks about cell danger response. And what that means is whenever we have too much oxidative stress, we have inflammation, mitochondrial dysfunction, heavy metal toxicities, pathogens, GMOs, all of the things that are going to break your body down, whenever we have too much overload on the body, we go into defense mode and we prioritize the cellular processes that need to be handled with the little amount of energy that we have. And a lot of the cell danger response is focused at fighting free radicals and making antioxidants and reducing oxidative stress. So when you go ahead and take stimulants to help with that cell danger response, you're just revving the engines even further and missing out on the point of what the body is doing for a reason. The body is not producing energy because it doesn't want to limit the ability to be able to fight the most important priority sequence. And so with that being said, a lot of the times you want the body to slow down. And by taking all these stimulants, you're just overpowering a faulty adrenal system, and you're revving the engines on high with very little gas in the tank, and you crash even further. So sometimes less is more, and that's a real take-home lesson point for you guys. But at the end of the day, this is for those that have adrenal fatigue, but you got to reduce your neuroendocrine response. So you got to start to breathe. You need to start to get outside. You need to be able to get off some of your supplements. You need to be able to meditate. You need to maybe get on off the stimulants, the nicotine, and the caffeine, and you need to just start to let those engines cool down before you start to go on this. And then once you do that, part of the battle is being won. And that might sometimes may be address your marriage, or that sometimes may mean address your mouthy child, or get some help with your mother who your siblings aren't helping you out with. I mean, you need to speak up. and I hate to be the tough but loving friend, but I need to be. And you need to stick up for yourself. And when you are being taken advantage of, and you're not communicating, and you're not being you're the caregiver, and you're caring for everyone else except for yourself. And you need to care for yourself, and you need to speak up. And no adrenal gland supplement in the world is going to trump what you need to do on your life to get your life back. So, sorry about that. I digressed, but I think you needed to hear that. So basically, those that have a stress response that are just spiraling out of control, I wouldn't suggest starting on ketogenic diets. I would start doing some kind of gut cleanse potentially, or doing some inflammation control, or you know, some glutathione, some turmeric, some liposomal vitamin C, some very gentle anti-inflammatory nutrients that will settle you down can be really, really helpful before we start. So how do you do it? Step one, ensure that the patient is appropriate and suitable for a ketogenic diet. So what we talked about a little bit earlier. Education, understanding the reasons why high-fat diets are so helpful, because you're going to stand up to a lot of negativity from a spouse, from a doctor, from your peers, from a lot of people are going to tell you that you're crazy, and so you need to understand why it's so helpful. It's not suitable for on and off again approach, so you can't do it one day and not the other. It takes a lot of time to get into ketosis for a lot of people. It could take 2 months to 6 months, or it could be right away depending on how healthy you are and what kind of diet you've been eating prior to starting. You also need to understand the purpose of this so that you have the courage of your convictions. And then you have to understand for some setbacks, like the keto flu. I had the keto flu, actually. I didn't even realize it until I did. And I was getting headaches, and I was getting shaky. And I was actually playing soccer, and my muscles would cramp up. And what happens is when you are decreasing your carbohydrate intake, you're also decreasing your water intake because carbohydrates are all water. So you're going to become dehydrated. You're going to lose sodium. You're going to lose magnesium. And if you're not replenishing with a good, healthy multi-mineral or mineral formula and some sodium, pink salt, or bouillon cube that's organic, you're going to start to crash and get the keto flu as well. So that's something you have to be aware of. Evaluating labs are really important. Like I mentioned before in other seminars, talking about evaluating you from a functional point of view, meaning just because you're told your blood tests are normal doesn't necessarily mean you're healthy. Just because there's no L or H for low and high on your blood work doesn't mean you're necessarily healthy. So you need to look at it from a functional point of view. And it just means when you're normal, you're not sicker than the average sick person. And so what I tell patients is make sure you're as healthy as the average healthy person, and then that means you got to look at the blood test a little bit differently. So we want to see, is there any impaired liver function? Is there any gallbladder problems, thyroid problems? If there are, then what are the immune stressors that are dragging it down? And maybe we need to address those first before we start to get you in a ketogenic state. So I hope that one of the other lessons that you get from this workshop tonight is that I just don't put anyone on a ketogenic diet, and I just don't say, ha, 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 this is like a cure-all diet for everyone. There's a lot of intricacies that need to be addressed before you start that, and even while you're in it, need to be specifically modified for your requirements, that there's a lot of ins and outs and what have yous for you to get into ketosis, to start it, and to maintain it. Also, kidney or blood cell issues, those are really important things that you need to evaluate. Low vitamin D, you can put someone on a loading phase to get their vitamin D levels up and then do that before you begin a ketogenic diet. And then lipid metabolism, looking at a full cardiovascular profile with all the different components to understand what may be going on there. Absolute contraindications, you can read through this. Carnitine deficiencies, carnitine breakdowns, fatty acid destruction. These are all SNPs that you can get on your 23andMe. And typically I'll do a profile on this before I begin with someone, especially if I see their cardiovascular values being sky high and they seem to be eating a healthy diet. Also, caution is for those that have elevated liver enzymes, impaired gut function, history of kidney stones, renal disease, certain heart conditions, history of pancreatitis, or abnormal blood chemistry. So that's why I really encourage you to work with someone like myself or someone else that's going to do a full blood panel, functional evaluation, great case history with you before you just say, okay, let's get you keto adaptive. But let's plant the seed that we're going to get you keto adaptive, but let's get rid of the low-hanging fruit first. And so that's step one. So basically you're assessing the individual, making sure that they're a good fit, and trying to get them mentally prepared for what's going to follow. Step two, preparation. So whenever you start a new routine, it takes a little bit of a mind shift, a little bit of a paradigm shift. You're going to introduce yourself to healthier eating habits. Start by adding healthier sources of vegetables, so less starches and more leafy green vegetables that have a lot of folate in it. Proteins and fats, very gradually changing those sources. Learning to buy your foods at healthier supermarkets, organic foods that aren't sprayed, that don't have pesticides in it, that don't have GMOs. Those are really important things. Basic cooking techniques and recipes. There's a great book out there. It's called The Ketogenic Kitchen by Domini Kemp and Patricia Daly. It's called The Ketogenic Kitchen, and that's a really great book that I would recommend for you as well. You're going to be removing your sugars and refined foods from your diet, and you could shift towards a paleo type of diet. Step three is monitoring your glucose levels. Start measuring your glucose. So get a glucose monitor and start measuring. Two ways that I suggest you go about doing it. If you have a resting glucose level of greater than 110, then what I suggest you do is you start with 60 to 75 grams of carbohydrates a day for 3 to 4 weeks. If, however, you're not more than 110, then I suggest that you start at 20 grams of carbs per day. So let me repeat that just so that you can write that down. Get a glucose monitor and measure your glucose. If your glucose for fasting is greater than 110, then you're going to start at 60 to 75 grams of carbohydrates per day for 3 to 4 weeks. Then you're also going to measure your ketones to see where you're at. If, however, you're less than 110 for fasting, your blood glucose levels, then you're going to start at 20 grams per day, and you're going to measure your ketone levels. For both of you guys, as you start to get more into ketosis, then you can start to change your carbohydrate intake. So once those glucose levels are stable and you're lower than 108, then you can aim for 65 to 85 for your glucose levels. That's what you're looking for, is when you measure your glucose, when you become keto adaptive, you're anywhere between 65 to 85, or sometimes even lower. And once you've stabilized that with regular ketones, then you can increase your carbohydrate intake. Regular ketones are going to be between 0.6 to 3.0. So I'll repeat that one more time. Once you've decided how much carbs you're going to take, whether you're between 60 to 75 or you're at 20. Once you get your blood glucose in the 65 to 85 range on fasting, or once you are in a 0.6 to 3.0 for your ketones, then you can start changing your carbohydrate intake to more or less. I hope that made sense. If it doesn't make sense, then it means you need to work with me. Step five, adaptation. Once you become keto adaptive, then you can start changing your protein intake somewhere in the 15 to 25% of your total intake. You're just going to need to measure. And you can change your fats to 60 to 75% of your total intake. Some of you may need more. And then you can change your carbs to 10 to 15%. And once you start testing and you start getting out of the ketone range, then you need to back off whatever you were doing and bring it back down to where you were. How do you know if you're keto adaptive? Well, for one, you're going to have more energy. You're not going to be as hungry. You're going to have more clarity. You're just going to feel better. But in terms of testing, your urine test, make sure you're above 15 milligrams per deciliter. With blood testing, you're going to aim between 0.6 to 1 millimoles in the morning and 1 to 3 in the rest of the day. And for breath testing, you're going to aim for greater than 45 in the breath test with the ketonics meter. If any of you guys want these slides presentations, make sure you email me and I will send you the presentation. That way you'll have it for your reference. Endogenous ketogenesis, basically what that means is you're making ketones from the stored fat that you've accumulated or in your body. You're restricting your carbs to 5 to 10, 15%, your protein to 15 to 25%, and your fat 70 to 80%. I can't tell you exactly how because it's going to be different from patient to patient. Sources of carbs, sources are mainly from vegetables, some fruits, honey, and maltodextrin. Sources of carbohydrates should contain green leafy vegetables, low levels during the day and higher levels in the evening. I do like net carbs. I do believe in net carbs. That's something that I've changed before. Net carbs is basically if you look at the breakdown of carbs and it says it's 23 grams of carbs, but there is 6 grams of fiber, then basically you know that you're at 17 grams of net carbs. Then that would contribute to your total carbs. I used to say don't do the net carbs, but I do believe to do the net carbs. So that means you're trying to keep your microbiome healthy, the fiber up in your diet. And that's a big shortcoming when you become keto adaptive is you forget to eat your healthy green leafy vegetables and broccoli and cauliflower and all the fibrous carbs and vegetables that will help clean up that microbiome in the gut. Proteins, meat, fish, eggs, vegan whey powder, collagen, high-protein vegetables. I always recommend to get a cross-reactive test to see if you're reacting to eggs and dairy, because if you are, then that could really be draining your inflammation or creating inflammation. And on one hand, you're trying to get healthy. On the other hand, you're eating a lot of more inflammatory food. So a lot of the times I'll do some food reactivity testing on patients to give them the idea as to what foods they can eat when they're becoming keto-adaptive. So that's a big one. I say that you're aiming between 1.0 grams per kilogram to 1.7. So write that down. Whatever you weigh, divide that by 2.2. So if you have someone that weighs 200 pounds, you divide that by 2.2. It's going to be somewhere in the 85 range, 80, maybe 90 range. And then what you'll do is you'll times that by 1 to 1.7 to figure out what a good amount of protein should be for your diet. However, if you eat too much protein, you're going to get into gluconeogenesis. Vegans are going to have a tough time with this because they're not eating the animal sources of fat, and obviously they're not eating the animal sources of protein. So they're going to have to like a lot of coconuts and avocados. And hopefully if you're more liberal, you can eat more eggs as well. Fats are mainly saturated fats, coconut butters, avocados, medium-chain triglycerides, monounsaturated fats. Make sure you're getting a good, healthy omega-6 ratio. You're limiting the omega-6. These are hydrogenated oils. And make sure you get it in every meal. So patients will put ghee butter with every meal and just sort of slap that on there. Or they'll put medium-chain triglycerides with every meal and they'll just sort of slap that on there as well. Alcohol is going to be a potent inhibitor of ketosis. When you consume that, basically you're going to use up all your beta-hydroxybutyrate, and it's going to take you out of ketosis. However, the good news is the longer you do it, the more you're going to be receptive to alcohol, and you could probably drink a glass of wine and not get out of ketosis. So that's good. This is what a typical food would look like. You have nice broccoli rabe and some avocados or ghee butter with some protein, or a salad with shaved parmesan and salmon. And, you know, it doesn't have to be difficult. I usually tell patients, think about the same two plates. Think about a sweet potato, a pork chop, and an avocado. With the ketogenic diet, you're going to have more avocado and say butter and less of the sweet potato and a moderate amount of the protein. With the glucose diet or the using glucose, you're going to have more of the sweet potato and less of the avocado and probably more of the protein. So it's really changing the percentages more than anything else. Intermittent fasting could be really helpful. I know it's a four-letter word for a lot of people that suffer with adrenal fatigue problems. But remember, we took a lot of work to get here. We tested, we looked at your blood work, we made sure you weren't dealing with any contraindications. We reduced your neuroendocrine stress. We got you meditating and breathing better. We got you off some of the supplements that you were taking that were just driving your cell danger response over the top. We were also calming you, maybe using some ashwagandha or some other very calming supplements and vitamin C that's liposomal. And then we started slowly. We tried to get to the point where we can get into redistricting our carbs and you're feeling more energetic. It's not like we just say, okay, tomorrow I want you to fast. It just doesn't work that way. But that can help your ability to produce more ketones. And that, more than anything, is going to help your ability to produce more ketones. And you can go in a 16 to 24-hour fast where you're consuming your ketones from your stored fat. But that's an advanced strategy, and that's going to take time to get there. But it's really great. 6 ketogenic supplements that you should be using as part of your adrenal fatigue recovery strategy: medium-chain triglyceride oils. You can coconut oils. You can have a tablespoon with each meal once you get used to that. I know that sounds not palatable to a lot of people, but that's something you can ultimately do over time to get you into a ketogenic state, and that will help drop your glucose immediately. NADH. Is a really helpful, energetic, phase one mitochondrial support supplement that's going to help you with your methylation. It's going to help with mitochondrial function, and it's going to help with getting into ketosis. Also, oxalacetate acid, it's part of the citric acid cycle. It supports methylation, helps mitochondrial function. It's going to increase your NAD to NADH ratio. You're just producing energy better. It's going to get you into ketosis a lot quicker. L-carnitine, it helps shuttle fatty acids inside the mitochondria, and it allows us to burn fat a lot easier. So that's a great supplement as well. Phosphatidylcholine, that is for the membranes. I almost suggest everyone get on this supplement, whether or not you've had a genetic test or not. The majority of you guys are not making cell membranes effectively, and that's what this does. So it's really great. Digestive enzymes and bile acids. A lot of people that have had their gallbladder out or have a lot of liver congestion and bile congestion, they need digestive enzymes and bile acids to help with emulsification of their fats and utilization. And cautions. What are some cautions? Execution. You need to monitor. It's imperative that you monitor and you get into the zone of figuring out how much carbs you need, how much protein you're exceeding before you get out of ketosis. It takes a little bit of time to get adaptive. It's not going to happen overnight, and hopefully you're working with someone that's going to help you through the process. Poor quality diet is a risk, not getting enough green leafy vegetables and enough fiber in your diet, and realizing it could take up to 6 months. You know, if you're not monitoring and you stop after 2 weeks or you stop after a month and you're hungry all the time and you need your carbs, it means you haven't been eating enough fat. That's what it means. Or it means you've been having too much protein because now you're still burning sugar. But certainly it doesn't mean that ketosis didn't work for you. Other risk factors are metabolism. Potentially you could become dehydrated. Your lipid profiles could change if you have some of those important SNPs. That's why we suggest the full CV cardiovascular assessment. And then you can have low sodium in the body. So anyways, I want to get to conclusions. I want to thank you guys for being on the call tonight. I had a couple of case studies. I just wanted to talk to you about, obviously I talked about myself. I wanted to talk about Janine. She's a great patient. She had mitochondrial dysfunction. She was healthy. She's a tennis player. She's in her mid-60s. And you would never know by looking at her that she has high glucose levels. And so I told her that, you know, all glucose problems or A1C problems or type 2 diabetes or metabolic syndrome, all glucose problems are preceded first by mitochondrial dysfunction. And she was like, what the heck does that mean? I told her basically what it means is your mitochondria are unhealthy, you're not producing energy effectively, you have low-grade oxidative stress, you're burning glucose too much, and you're inflamed, and we need to help you. Let's get you into a ketogenic state. And she was very, very observant and very persistent, and she was just a great patient. And I think it was over the course of 4 weeks, we dropped her A1C from I think it was 6.8 to 5.6. I mean, it was just amazing. And so these are the type of things that can happen by becoming ketogenic.
Thanks for tuning into today's show. If you like what you've heard and you're interested to see if you're a good fit to work with our Adrenal Awakening program, here's what to do next. head to adrenalfatiguesociety.com/apply and book an appointment to speak to our team. Here's how it works. We'll get on the phone for about 45 minutes and get you crystal clear on three things. Number one, where exactly do you want to be with your health and where are you now? Number two, what are the genetic components that haven't been discovered that are impacting your health? And number three, what are the environmental triggers that may be overlapping with these genetic components keeping you from getting optimal health? Remember, getting your energy back just won't happen by itself. You need expert guidance to make that happen. We've helped clients all over the world transform their lives, quadruple their energy, and fix their metabolism, and make the world a better place. To see if you can do the same thing, head to adrenalfatiguesociety.com/apply. I'm Dr. Richard Joel Rosen, and we'll talk to you soon.